Would you like to turn back to Genesis chapter 50, page 47 of the Old Testament sections of the Church Bibles? And just to break all conventions here in All Souls, I've actually got a text. Genesis 50, verse 19. But Joseph said to his brothers, "Fear not, for am I in the place of God? As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, to bring it about that many people should be kept alive as they are today." Of course, we'd all like to be able to say it when our most cherished plans fall through, when we fail vital exams, when we're refused job after job, when we're misunderstood and misrepresented by other people. We'd like to be able to smile and say, "It's all to the good. I'm sure there's a purpose in this." Rolls so smoothly off Joseph's lips. But it's not as easy as it sounds. At least I don't find it so. And I expect a lot of you find it hard to see God's love in the midst of suffering. So today I want to speak to all who feel they've been betrayed, let down, who feel that people are pushing them around, that others don't recognize their feelings or their rights, to those who've been disappointed in their hopes, to those, in fact, who can identify with the kind of experiences Joseph went through and would like to be able to say with him, "God meant it for good," but find it hard. But before we get underway, I want to make one preliminary point. You know the 18th century French writer Voltaire? He was decidedly not a Christian. And in his most famous book, Candide, he has a character who goes around all the time saying, "We live in the best of all possible worlds, where everything is to the good. Thousands die in earthquakes, there are brutal wars, flagrant injustices, open cannibalism and other horrors all around them, and still this character smiles. Nothing will shake his confidence that everything in this world is good." Now let's be quite clear, that is not a Christian view. This is not the best of all possible worlds, because evil has insinuated itself into God's creation. In our world, men can and do perpetrate evil against one another. Joseph says so in verse 20. "As for you, you meant evil against me." So no one is asking you to say that the suffering others may cause you is good. It's not. It's evil. But what is for us to grasp and accept is that God can take and use evil. I imagine you believe that in theory. I do. But sometimes it's so hard to see in practice. And my guess is that it must have been hard for Joseph too. So, today we're going on a voyage of imagination. And I admit that much of what I will say is based on what I imagine must have taken place. Reading between the lines of this simple, sober narrative, trying to get inside Joseph's mind, and thinking of some of the obstacles he must have had to battle with before he could say, verse 20, "As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good." Maybe you face some of these obstacles too in your mind. And predictably, they all begin with but. The first I've called, but answer came there none. Turn back, if you would, to chapter 37. You'll remember the story. Joseph was hated by his brothers. And immediately they saw him, verse 18, they began plotting to kill him. So when, in verse 23, they met him, they stripped him of his precious coat and threw him unceremoniously into a deep, empty pit. Now, how do you think he felt? After all, he was, it seems, only a lad of 17. I imagine he was eaten up with fear. He could hear his brothers talking about him. Couldn't catch the words, but he knew they were talking about him. What would they do? Sometime later, he found out. He was dragged up out of the pit, sold to some foreigners, and marched off hundreds of miles from home to be sold in an Egyptian market as a slave. He had a long time to think. What am I going to do? How will I be made to live? I've got to put up with this for the rest of my life? Are these the only prospects I have? His whole life stretched before him as a common slave. It was desperately bleak. And I imagine he prayed and prayed, but answer came there none. In this whole passage, God is not mentioned once. All we get is the plain, bare facts. He'd had dreams before. God had spoken to him. But not now. In fact, as the story progresses, everyone else seems to have dreams. The chief butler, the chief baker, Pharaoh himself, even Jacob. But nothing for Joseph. No word, no answer. And this absence of God from the story is surely the mirror of Joseph's feelings. God seemed to have deserted him, to be nowhere. He was left with his own fears and no comfort from God. Have you ever experienced that? You come to the end of your time at college, or later on you're made redundant. And at first you thought it would be easy to get a job. But you put in application after application, and nothing. So fear begins to get its claws into you. What am I going to do? Have I really no prospects? How long is this going to go on for? Or you're ill, in pain, and you don't know what it is. You've had tests, but the doctor's come up with nothing definite, and you can't fight back the fear. Am I going to have to put up with this pain for the rest of my life? What is it, if only I knew? And so you pray and pray, but there's no answer. Why? Why doesn't God do something, say something? I don't know why God left Joseph in the dark. To humble him? To teach him sympathy? Perhaps. But I do know God was with him, whatever he felt. Next time we meet Joseph is in chapter 39. And look there at what is said. Chapter 39, verse 2. The Lord was with Joseph. Verse 3. And his master saw that the Lord was with him. Or again, verse 21. But the Lord was with Joseph. And God is not one to come and go. He was there with Joseph, even when there seemed to be no answer, which Joseph later realized. That was when he could say to his brothers, "As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good." He'd overcome the first obstacle. And I guess the second was this: "But it seems so unjust." That's chapter 39, Joseph and Potiphar's wife. He tried to do the right thing. He tried to deserve the trust placed in him. But he'd been falsely accused, and of course, some mud always sticks. It's much easier to believe someone's in the wrong than that he's innocent, especially where sex is concerned. And it was all very well to be trusted by the jailer, but it was prison all the same. Psalm 105 tells us that his feet were clamped in fetters and his neck put in a collar of iron. That's verse 18. And I imagine it must have been easy to feel bitter. It's so unjust. I thought God was supposed to be on the side of the upright, but it seems in reality to be quite the other way round. Because if I'd slept with her, I'd still be in control of the master's house. Whereas now that I've kept strictly to God's standards, I've got chucked in here for my pains. How easily bitterness keeps us from trusting God's goodness. Haven't you found that? There may be some member of your family with whom you don't get on. You don't particularly like them, and you know they don't like you. But as a Christian, you try to do the right thing. You call in on them if you're passing by. It's quite an effort. You send them a Christmas card. You make a point of remembering their birthday. But it's all greeted with hostility. Oh, the exterior is politeness and sweetness itself. But from time to time, little sarcastic remarks poke through. And you know they're talking against you behind your back. And that people believe what they say. They're so persuasive. And sometimes you leave them seething, feeling bitter. It seems so unfair. Or how about the way they treat you at work? They take you for granted. You go to church, you're supposed to be a Christian, so they pile all the extra work onto you. And you feel strongly that others aren't pulling their weight. It's unfair. You're bitter. I don't know if Joseph felt like that. I think I would have done in his position. It was an unhappy time for him. A time when he had to face pretty poisonous evil. But that is the Bible's realistic picture. There is much evil in the world, and Christians get the brunt of it just like anyone else. Perhaps more. But that doesn't mean God has abandoned us. That doesn't mean he doesn't care. On the contrary, for those with eyes to see, "You meant evil against me, but God means it for good." The obstacle of bitterness, one of the hardest to overcome, and also one of the most necessary. And here's the third: "But I'd so hoped." There's nothing worse than to have your hopes raised only to be dashed. And yet that's exactly what happened to Joseph in chapter 40. Again, you remember what happened. There were these two bigwigs thrown into the same jail, Pharaoh's chief butler and the chief baker. And they both, verse 5, had dreams which Joseph was able to interpret. He was sure he'd got it right. The chief butler would be restored to his old position, and the chief baker would be hanged. But that meant the butler would have the ear of the king. And so Joseph hastily adds verse 14. Chapter 40, verse 14. He says, "Remember me when it is well with you, and do me the kindness, I pray you, to make mention of me to Pharaoh, and so get me out of this house." 3 days passed. And lo and behold, the key turned in the lock, and the chief butler was released, just as Joseph had predicted. His heart must have beat faster. Freedom, soon. But the days went by, and nothing happened. Because, we're told, verse 23, the chief butler did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. It must have been a terrible disappointment, crushing letdown. And I guess he was plunged into depression. Have you been let down by people? Perhaps when someone took you on for a job, they held out promises of quick promotion. And that's why you agreed. It wasn't a very interesting job in itself, but the future looked bright. And then the days ticked by, and nothing happened. You didn't like to raise the issue yourself. But when you finally did, you were greeted by excuses, putting off noises, and no promotion. And you felt unwanted, depressed. And of course, there's the most delicate area of all, the area Dennis prayed about, marriage. Perhaps you felt at one time a particular relationship was really getting somewhere. The man or woman encouraged you to think that way. You'd pinned your hopes on that relationship. And then it all fell to pieces. Maybe a long time ago, but it still hurts. And you've never really been able to bring that memory under the authority of Christ. You can't quite face it. And there, especially in the midst of your shattered hopes, you need to cling to this precious truth. God meant it for good. Oh yes, there's pain. And indeed, there was evil on both sides, probably. But God can and does take that evil and use it for good. And now the last obstacle, which I call, but surely there were other ways. Let's come on to our first reading, chapter 45. Joseph is just making himself known to his brothers. And halfway through verse 4, he said, "I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt. And now, do not be distressed or angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there are yet 5 years in which there will be neither ploughing nor harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant on earth, and to keep alive for you many survivors. So it was not you who sent me here, but God." It all sounds so very high-minded. All these bad experiences, but God was working through each one. And why? Joseph says, to preserve people alive in Egypt and farther afield as well. Yes, but Joseph must sometimes have thought, as I did reading his story, couldn't there have been other ways? Surely God could have got Joseph to Pharaoh without his brother's hatred and the slavery and the years in prison and all the other suffering. And so the questioning begins and the resentment mounts. Haven't you felt that for others or yourself? You see a friend permanently maimed through an accident, or scarred by a broken marriage, or you go through considerable and prolonged suffering yourself. And yes, you can see the good that's been brought out of these things, but was it really worth all that suffering? And if God is so powerful, couldn't he have found other ways of teaching you the same things? And then when Christian friends try to comfort you and say, I'm sure there must be a purpose in all this, sometimes the resentment and the questioning only increase. It's very, very natural. You think that the survivors of the Manorum disaster were saved all this because they were missionaries? Not a bit of it. Yes, indeed, they could see blessing as a result. Indeed, they were drawn closer together. Certainly, they appreciated the love shown by so many people. And yes, there were one or two brought to Christ as a result. But still, the nagging, tempting question comes. Lord, surely there were other ways. Well, if Joseph had ever felt like that, and I imagine he must, he'd got over that by now. Maybe there were other ways to achieve the same things, but God had chosen this way. That was plain. And so Joseph could say, as for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good. Why? Why, Lord? Why? It's often the question we most want to answer, and we can't. This sermon is called Joseph and the Purposes of God. And I've majored on Joseph because, frankly, we don't know enough often to understand the purposes of God in our lives. I don't know why God let Joseph go through all that, why he lets us undergo great suffering. I can guess, but when it comes down to it, I don't know why. But I do know that. I know that if you're a Christian, God loves you more than anyone else in the world loves you. I know that because he says so repeatedly in the Bible. I know it again when I see Jesus on the cross. And you know it, or have known it, in your experience. And I know that you will not be spared evil. But some of you are right in the midst of it now, and that others of us will feel we're engulfed in evil, perhaps in the very near future. And I know that God asks of us not to give in to bitterness or futile, resentful questioning, not to wallow in self-pity, not to plunge into the bittersweet experience of moping by yourself or on the shoulders of others, but to give yourself in faith to trust. Because I also know, and it's a stupendous, essential truth, that God can use and will use if you let him. Every painful experience, every kind of suffering, yes, every evil. He will use every evil for good. That is the love, the power, and the glory of our God. So let's turn to prayer. Many of us here know suffering, either in our own lives or in the lives of others. A moment of silence when we bring that suffering, and more important perhaps still in the context of the sermon, our own reaction to it, to God, humbling ourselves, asking his forgiveness, finding our trust in his goodness renewed. Father, we don't always know why you act as you do. Sometimes you keep your purposes from us. But help us never to lose hold of this basic fact, which we know, that you love us, that you are good, and that you are so gloriously powerful that you can take and use even evil and make it for good. And we thank you for the supreme example of that, the cross of Jesus. In his name, amen.